Welcome back to the Animal House. I'm Sam Litzinger with Dr. Katie Nelson, host of The Pet Show with Dr. Katie on DC's News Channel 8. Dr. Gary Weitzman will be back next week. We'll answer your animal-related questions. Well, actually, Katie will do that. 877-610-3647. That's 877-610-3647. You can also send us your questions or your comments using our website, wamuanimalhouse.org. Let's take a telephone call from Virginia, who's calling us not from Virginia, but from Silver Spring, Maryland. Virginia, glad to have you with us in the Animal House. Question for Dr. Katie?
Yes, hi. To make the story short, we adopted a few weeks ago a cat, Hopewell, 1 year and a half from a DC shelter. And he was fine. He had no medical issues on his record. But once we got him at home, we realized he couldn't climb the stairs properly. He couldn't jump on a sofa.
Oh.
And after multiple visits to the vet in the first week we had him, we were told that he has abnormal hips, that he has fractures in both femoral head that has been healed, probably after trauma. And they told us, well, a surgery could be helpful. Which is very, very expensive. And when I came back to the shelter to tell them that, they told me they didn't know at all. They had no idea. So my question now is a surgery that is beyond our means right now worth fighting for in terms of raising money? Are we in a position of asking the shelter to help us on this? And if not, what kind of quality of life he can have? Is the pain going to get worse? We don't know exactly what to do.
Yeah, these are old fractures, right? They've healed, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking on that. Okay, Katie, where do you start?
Well, Virginia, first off, thank you so much for choosing adoption rather than purchasing an animal. And my question for you is, do you know what type of surgery your veterinarian is recommending is for the for the hips?
It's ostectomies.
Okay. All right.
Bilateral femoral head and neck ostectomies.
Okay.
Do you want to translate that for us, Katie?
So basically, if you think about the hips being a ball and socket joint, basically the head of the femur is like a ball. And what you can do is actually, and it sounds strange, you can actually cut off the head of the femur and you sew the muscles and tendons from the hip joint to the muscles and tendons of the leg. And you basically can create sort of a false joint. There's no bone there, so therefore it takes away the pain because the pain is typically bone on bone rubbing there. And so this is never going to be an athletic cat. This is going to be a cat that's going to have sort of, you know, floppy hip joints, if you will. But it could definitely take away the pain that your kitty is feeling. And, you know, you said already that your kitty at 1.5 years old is on pain medications every day. And quality of life for a cat in this position going forward is not going to be great when you have that much pain associated, you know, with every single move.
That's if she doesn't have the operation.
If they don't do the surgery, right. It is expensive, but there are options out there. The first thing that I would do is, number one, talk with the shelter about any sort of low-cost surgical options that they may have. In no way do you want to be accusational, but you just want to say, look,
yeah.
I have this kitty and I want to keep her. We love her. We want her as part of our family, but we also want to be able to do what's best for her. And we want to know if you guys would possibly be able to help us in any way by setting us up with one of your low-cost veterinary options. They, again, may have, you know, systems in place already with veterinarians that they may be able to help you with that, with the cost of this, at least. The other thing that I would recommend is there's a veterinarian down in the Richmond area. They have a practice called Healing Hands, and they actually do low-cost surgeries for people. Start with calling the shelter, give the folks down at Healing Hands a call, and I bet between the two of those, you'll be able to find somebody that can help you.
Okay, great.
What is the recovery period for something like that surgery?
Well, you'll see a major reduction in pain almost immediately, you know, because you've taken that pain source away with the bone on bone rubbing. But, you know, of course, there's going to be time where the body has to repair, you know, has to form scar tissue in that area so that it strengthens that area. And they may choose to do just one at a time because it may not be possible to do both femoral heads at one time and have a kitty that can actually still get up and walk very well. So you may want to do like the left one first and the right one next, you know, a few months later. But it really should just be a couple of weeks.
So make those two phone calls and then report back to us about where you're going with this, okay?
I will.
Thank you.
All right,
bon chance.
Good luck, Virginia.
Bonne chance.
Merci.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our telephone number is 877-610-3647. Our website is WAMUAnimalHouse.org. Let's take a telephone call from Amanda, who's calling us from Washington, D.C. Amanda, glad to have you with us in the Animal House. Question for Dr. Katie?
Yes. Thank you so much, guys, for having me. So we have two cats, and the cat who is being who's having some issues is a 12-year-old tabby. Her name's Little Orange. We adopted her when she's 1 year old, and she came from a not great set of circumstances. Aww. She was living for 9 months in a house with a Siamese who beat her up repeatedly. So this is a cat who's always had some social problems, incredibly skittish, incredibly shy. And we've spent the last 10, 11 years trying to, you know, get her to relax and to mellow down. So she's been a good cat, but she is one of those type cats.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the situation. 6 months ago, she out of nowhere decided to poop all over the basement carpeting, which is about 10 feet away from the litter box in the laundry room. And then she began urinating, muffin joined in, the carpet was totaled. So we tore it up, cleaned it up, put down hardwood instead, and problem seemed to resolve itself. We know that she likes the litter box, mainly Little Orange. She likes the litter box cleaned regularly. If we go late, we'll get in trouble. We're very good about that. It's a big house she's in, and the two cats seem to get along fairly well. And then several weeks ago, the Little Orange, again, defecated and urinated all over the rug that we got to put down because we're expecting a baby in 6 weeks and we wanted to have a nice rug on the floor. And this sent us into a total panic.
Oh.
Because the litter box was clean. It was quiet.
Well, first off, Amanda, congratulations on your baby. That's super, super exciting. Second off, have you, in this whole process, have you taken Little Orange in to the veterinarian since any of this started?
We did.
Okay.
And we took her to a vet who also sees dogs, which I think is part of the problem. She doesn't tend to wait well. The smell of dogs seems to upset her. And she freaked out in the veterinarian's office to the point where they said that she really needs to go to a clinic that maybe just has cats or have someone come to the house to do blood work, because that was their theory was, well, maybe she's sick, maybe there's something else going on. So we are researching mobile places to come draw blood from our house because the episode was so bad in the vet's office.
There are a couple of kitty-only clinics around as well. So that might be an option as well. So whenever I hear of a 12-year-old kitty all of a sudden having, you know, outside-of-the-box issues, whether it's urine or stool, my brain immediately starts to itch a little bit because first thing I want to make sure is that, you know, are we having any arthritic issues? Does it hurt her to step over into the litter box? You know, that's question number one. Is there some reason why she doesn't want to get into the litter box? So is it shoulder pain, elbow pain, you know, hip pain, back pain, something along those lines? So that's question number one. Question number two, is there something that's causing her to have to go more frequently or more urgently so that she doesn't make it to the box? Because at 12 years old, most of the time, I'm going to qualify that, most of the time it's not purely behavioral. You know, unless there's some massive change that's happened. Obviously, you're pregnant. That is a massive change within the household.
How could you do that to the cat? I don't understand.
That is a definite massive change in the household. But, you know, typically that's not going to be enough to start something along these lines, you know, that's so bad. So I would definitely want to have that blood work done. That would be, you know, number one, and number two would be having blood work done, having urine done, and having some x-rays done, because we want to make sure that there's nothing going on metabolically to cause this. We want to make sure there's nothing going on orthopedically to cause this, because it may be that, you know, you need a litter box with shorter sides, or maybe you need one that has a little ramp to go into it so that it's not hurting her hips when she goes in. But there's no way to know all that without having the actual workup.
All right.
And I think you should name the new baby Orange. It's just
no.
Okay. It is the new black, I hear.
Amanda, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Our telephone number is 877-610-3647. Our website is wamuanimalhouse.org. Let's take a telephone call from Anna Lee, who's calling us from Washington, D.C. Anna Lee, glad to have you with us in the Animal House. Question for Dr. Katie?
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. Sure. I really appreciate it. So I'm in a unique situation. I have a wonderful feral cat that I adopted 9 years ago, and we are moving into a new apartment with my sister, who has a lovely 5-year-old pup. And
okay.
Her dog is a Chihuahua Boston Terrier mix, a very happy dog, very smart dog. She was socialized with the neighbor's cat.
That's great. And what is your cat's name?
My cat's name is Callie.
Okay, Callie the cat. Now, how does Callie the cat feel about dogs?
Callie,
do we know?
Callie has not seen a dog up close and personal since she was a 5-month-old kitten.
Okay, that sets the stage
She's
for us.
She's been an indoor apartment all this time. And we were on the 6th floor, so she observes a lot of dogs walking by from the 6th floor. And now we're moving to a 2nd-floor apartment. It's really lovely. It's more spacious for her. But my question is how to best introduce them.
That's a great question.
It is a great question. So, okay, my answer in a nutshell is very slowly. There's a couple things that I would do first and foremost before you move in. When's the moving date? Couple of weeks?
Thursday.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right. So you don't have a lot of time.
It could be this Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
Okay.
It could be as late as Saturday.
Okay. So is the apartment in a position where you could go in today before you move in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
first thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
First thing I want you to do is I want you to get some. There's some feline pheromones out there, some feel good pheromones, and go into your room where she's going to be, and just make it kitty heaven in there.
Right.
I want pheromones all over that place, so that when she walks in, she's just like, ah. Second thing is, you know, let her stay in there and be comfortable for the first few days. Don't even, you know, bother letting her out of there the first few days. Make sure she's got her litter box and her food and a place to, you know, everything that's hers already in there. And, you know, I would have your bedroom furniture already in there. I would have everything in there before you brought her in, so that she walks in, she smells you, she feels like she's at home.
Right.
Then over the next, you know, week or so, you can start taking her out into the apartment in your arms. And I want the little puppy dog on a leash. You want controlled interaction for probably the first couple of weeks. And you're going to be able to assess the way that they feel about each other and the way that they're going to act around each other simply through these controlled interactions.
And our Dr. Gary's advice is often make sure the cat has a safe place, that it's like, okay, nobody can get me here up in my tree, for example.
Right. That's right.
Anna Lee, thank you. Let us know how it goes
thank
in a few weeks,
so
will you?
Oh, I really appreciate it.
Thank
yes,
you very
thank
much.
You.
And thank you, Dr. Katie.
Of course.
For the Animal House, I'm Mary McCann, and this is Bird Note. Birds are part of the complex web of nature, and each fits into this web in its own way. Hummingbirds are feathered sprites that can dart past you at high speed, but then stop on a dime. The bird's ability to hover lets it hang in front of a flower and probe with its long bill and tubular tongue, sucking up the nectar that provides essential nourishment. While feeding at a flower, a hummingbird gets pollen on its forehead and throat. When it visits another flower of the same species, it transfers the pollen to that flower. The pollen fertilizes the plant's eggs to produce its seeds, and the plant's reproduction is assured. Plants can't travel about to visit one another, but pollinators can. In return, the plants furnish that important nectar. Hummingbirds are well-known pollinators, but they aren't the only ones. These rainbow lorikeets you're hearing feed with their brushy tongues on the nectar of eucalyptus and other Australian plants. lorikeets and honey eaters in Australia, sunbirds in Africa, hummingbirds in the Americas. Throughout the tropics and into the temperate regions, there are bird pollinators and plants that depend upon them.
Coming up in the Animal House, a filmmaker discusses her new documentary about the complex lives of wild horses.
I had no idea when I first started working on this project that wild horses even still existed. But their numbers have changed significantly over time. Some people think they're going extinct. Some people think they're overpopulating, and there's a large gray area in between.